to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they're archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to talk about being your best self. And of course, we always aim to do that. We always aim to do our best and to bring our best game. But let's talk about how to do it and how we can really, well, really encourage others. Not only be our best, but encourage others to be their best too, our participants, and maybe even other groups, maybe even our opposition. Of course, we'd like them not to be their best selves in order to win against us, but yes. So, yes, we all know what I'm going to ask, don't you? That's so funny. Thank you all for being here and for all of your participation. And yes, I am going to ask the basic question because this is an unscripted show, and then we're going to take it from where you'd like to discuss. And, of course, the basic question is, what is our best self as leaders? What is our best self, right? What should we do? I'm going to say the top answer is, essentially speaking, to stay focused, to not kind of, well, wander off, not physically, but mentally, to really stay focused and really think about it and really watch the participants too, because, of course, we're interested in body language also, to see what people are saying, what they really mean, right? The second one we're going to talk about, which is a close runner-up to staying focused, is to listen with empathy, right? And we're going to remember that empathy is not necessarily agreement. It is understanding. Empathy is not agreement. Empathy is understanding, right? So that we can know why, really, and so that we can reach consensus, which is our goal. Yes. As leaders, we need to bring our best self to stay neutral because, after all, we're human beings. And, well, sometimes we really think one side is probably more reasonable than the other. We just like one side's people better or something. But no, we must remain neutral because we are the leader. There's a lot of talk about teams. That I'm seeing, and yes, I'm going to say being a team player, right? Yeah, because we're not exactly we are members of the team, but we're the leader member, right? Yeah, and it's a completely different idea, and so we need to think about what our relationship is to the team. Yeah, what is our relationship? What is our purpose? And how indeed are we the team leader? Are we members of the team? We're the leader of the team? Whatever. Let's talk about that because it depends on the culture. Depends on what your participants need, what your leadership style will be. This is a very important one, too, to talk about. A lot of people are talking about what I'm going to call preconceived notions, our own preconceived notions. Let's understand them and really bring them to the light of day, not necessarily tell everybody, but really acknowledge them to ourselves so that we can go, let's see how we need to do that so that we're really effective, right? Yes. So understanding our own preconceived notions. I like this. People are talking about all kinds of ways to consciously decide to do your best because we all figure that we're going to try to do our best because we're good people and we're fabulous leaders. But you might need to make a conscious decision to do so. Yeah, and there's little tricks of the trade. Ooh, I like them. And yeah, I'm going to call everything else convivial atmosphere, that you really put together something that people want to come to, something that they're proud to be a part of, a convivial atmosphere, so that we all understand that we are valued, right? Yeah. Now, let's talk about how we can assist our participants in being their best self, right? Because that's the second half of it. What, how can we assist our participants in being their best self? Yes, thank you. I knew somebody would say these words. We can model the civility rules, right? Yes, model the civility rules. You can't ask people to follow something that you don't model. Right. Yes, essentially speaking, the civility rules at their most basic core say we will not be rude to one another. We will not be rude to one another. Yes. How can we assist our participants in being their best self? By creating inclusion, I'm going to say. Let's invite everybody in. All right. Yeah, a lot of folks are talking about helping our participants by discussing it with them. How about discussing it as a team? How we're going to bring our best, right? Role playing is a good idea. We can say that we're going to take each side. Yeah, you have to be a little careful. We'll talk about that later. Yes. I think this is a really good idea. Sometimes it's kind of dicey. In order to bring our best selves, let's invite our invisible participants. Those people who are influencing our participants but aren't actually in the room. Somebody they report back to, might maybe not technically report back to, but you know what I mean. They're not making written reports and like that. It's not a government agency, but it is somebody who they respect and they want the approval of. So they're reporting back to them. They're talking to them. Let's find out who they are and, well, why don't we invite them? Yes, let's invite them to join. So let's start talking about all this stuff, or we're gonna run out of time before we start. For leadership best self, staying focused was one of our first ones. Yes, Mohammed has a real good point that you have to always remember that this is the first time for your participants, even if you've done it, what Mohammed says, 1,000 times. Yeah, you can't let your mind wander because you're sure of what's going to happen. No, different people, different circumstance, different potential outcome. Let's all really focus. Let's all really think about it. Let's all stay in the room, stay in the picture, right? Yeah. First of all, you also want to watch for body language and see how people are reacting. And you do have to remember that although you might be getting kind of bored, it's not boring for them. They've got some skin in the game, and this is their first time doing this. They need help. They need our help, right? Yeah, very important. Yes, thank you. Patrick and others are saying you also need to not only stay focused and know that this is their first time, but you have to model not using devices. Yes. I have a no texting, no blogging, no communicating with the outside world while we are in process rule. I cannot enforce that rule if I'm sneaking a peek at my emails. There is no way to do that without people knowing it because everybody does it and they know exactly what you're doing. It's not like, oh, they won't know. No, they will know. And you need to remember that, and you need to go, you know, this is not so good. I'm not going to do it because don't want them to do it. Right? Yeah. See, if you've got a rule like that, and I do, you have to obey it. Any kind of rules you have, you've got to obey them and not just go, well, they're not for me, they're for them. No, they're for everyone. Yes. So you need to model not not using devices. Staying focused, a lot of people are talking about eye contact. Yes, when somebody is speaking, you look directly at them. When SpongeBob is speaking to you, you make eye contact for sure. And not just look down and go, uh-huh. Ever see anybody do that? That's not staying focused, right? Yeah, make eye contact. Thomas says, find something interesting because every time is unique. Yes, you've got different people involved, if nothing else. That makes it unique. And even if you do the same type of negotiation all the time, and you do get to be a specialist, let's face it, every time is different. Every time is unique. Time, you have to think about it and go, oh, these are different people with different needs, different ideas. Let's think about this whole thing. Let's work on it. Let's think, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and let's find something interesting. Keep our attention. Keep us focused. Let's face it, a lot of times we need to have a little bit of help with the focus part. Mm-hmm. Our next one is listening with empathy. We understand that empathy is not agreement, not necessarily agreement, but understanding. We want to know all about whoever is speaking and why they have that position. And yes, thank you. In order to reach the state of empathy, and a whole lot of you are talking about the 5W questions. Thank you for listening in the past, and thank you for listening now. Yay! And the 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. And we have those questions so that we can get to the bottom of it. And we can gain some understanding of why someone's got that position that seems kind of odd to us. But not to them, right? Yeah. Why do they have that position? What causes them to think that? Yes, and we need to know that because we want to know how to reach consensus. And in order to learn how to reach consensus with this particular group and these particular people, well, we're going to have to understand why they hold their position. And then we're going to have to move towards the middle. So who, what, where, when, and why are the 5W questions that allow us to reach empathy, which is understanding. Do you ask them all at once? Not necessarily. It depends how the conversation goes. This isn't scripted. Are they asked in order? Not necessarily either. You break out whichever one you need, when you need it, so that we can all understand something. Now, that's an interesting question. People are asking if I do it in private, the 5W questions. The answer is it depends. I know you think I say that a lot, but it does. And it depends because, okay, a lot of times the answer to that is no. We do it kind of round robin. Everybody answers the same question because we all want to know. And we all want to gain empathy, and we all want to know what everybody's thinking. So we do not ask all of the questions at the same time because, well, it's going to be intrusive. We want to be able to say, you know, what does that mean? Who told you that? As we go along, right? Sometimes we ask them all at once in the exact same order. But oftentimes, I like to do it publicly. So we all can choose an answer is what the real key to it is, so that we all know something, so that we all can say, look, this is what we need to know, this is what we need to do, and we are going to reach an understanding and reach compromise, which is really what consensus is, right? Yeah. This is a good thing. Thank you. Padma says that understanding will enhance focus. Yes, what we just talked about, right? Yes, understanding will enhance focus. You'll take more interest because you understand what's going on, and you're working your way towards everybody reaching consensus agreement and a successful outcome. Yes, so it's fun. It's interesting. Yes, it is. Well, we're going to talk about preconceived notions. Yeah, let's do it here. It's also empathy gives us knowledge and thought about our own preconceived notions. Because as we're going to discuss further down, because preconceived notions of ourselves was one of our topics, but we can do it now. We ask ourselves the 5W questions so that we know if we've got a preconceived notion, what it is, how it impacts the relationships, how it impacts us as leader, and not do it because we're about to talk about remaining neutral, right? Yes. And you need to remain neutral, and you need to modify your leadership style. You need to modify your own opinions. You need to understand your own preconceived notions. Dare we call them biases, right? Before you can, and then you need to remain neutral about it. But you need to understand where you might not be neutral in order to remain neutral. Does that make sense? Yes, it does. You have to actually understand you have these biases and that we want to be careful of them and to not exercise them and not let them take hold is what it really is. Yeah, we don't want them to take hold. We need them to be understood, modified, and we need to remain neutral. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, this is really the reason. Marjorie says that you need to remain neutral because you are the guide to a workable outcome. Really true. We are the guide as leader to a workable outcome. We're trying to get something put together that works for everybody. Yay, team. And we are a team. Mm-hmm. Now, this is an interesting point, and I suppose it is oftentimes true. Hussein says that even if you have an opinion, it is inappropriate to voice it. Even if you have an opinion, it is inappropriate to voice it. Kind of depends on the situation. Some groups really don't want you to give an opinion. You're there to guide them. They don't care what you think because you're not really part of it. You're the glue that holds it together so that they can reach a decision. Right? Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Some groups really want you to make decisions and voice opinions, right? It depends. It depends on the needs of the participants. Pardon me. And yes, to a certain extent, people asking about leadership style. You have to know whether or not you should voice an opinion. And one of the ways to know is to think about your leadership style and what your participants need. Because you make a modification, at least I do, I modify my leadership style depending on the group. Some groups really, 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 really want you to make a decision for them. They do. They really desire it. They'd like you to just lead them. It's somewhat a cultural thing, not necessarily an ethnic culture, more like the culture of the group. And a lot of times the culture of the group is determined by the corporate culture, right? How we usually do these things is the key to it. What do we usually do? What do we value? How would we like you to proceed? Do we think we've hired you to make a decision for us? We'll give you all the facts and then you can give an opinion and we'll follow it, right? Have we hired you to just get us talking? You see, these are all different ideas. They're not the same at all. And understanding that will make you modify your leadership style somewhat. Now, you can't probably have completely different leadership styles, but you can indeed make modifications concerning the needs of the group. And that is a very important point, that sometimes you've got a group that really needs you to tell them what to do. And sometimes you've got a group that really wants to discuss it. They just need a neutral leader to help them in that act, to help them reach some sort of decision. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. I wouldn't have actually phrased it like this, but it is a good point. Quite a few people, Eric and others, are talking about a culture of failure and how you're sent in to break a deadlock. I must confess that is kind of my specialty, if I have one. I get called in a lot when groups have already not been successful in reaching a conclusion. Yeah, it might be a culture of failure. And they need to have someone guide them in how to turn it around, right? I get called in as the new sheriff in town quite a bit to make the group successful when it has already been unsuccessful, right? Right. Yeah. It's a negotiation skill more than anything else. Uh-huh. And it shows us what it is that we're going to do to make us actually be a successful team. Mm-hmm. And they've already failed. So they do have, I'll go with that, they do kind of have a culture of failure because they've already done it. They've had the we didn't make it problem, right? And that needs to be overcome. And you overcome it by being a strong leader, but not necessarily telling them what to do, unless they're a group that really needs that. There are some. And sometimes that's more corporate culture than anything else. Yes, they have been unsuccessful, and they need help in reaching their goals. Mm-hmm. Yes. Let's go on to being a team player, because, well, we would like to know how to do that. Mm-hmm. This is a good point, and that quite a few people are making. Sophia says, as leader, you are in charge of all the teams. As leader, you are in charge of all the teams. I think that's true. At least that's how I feel about it. Am I a team player? Yes, because I don't make our decisions by myself. Am I a team member? Well, I'm in charge of all the teams because we need somebody to be in charge, to take the wheel and steer, so to speak, which means that I keep track of the progress or lack thereof, and I make assignments, and we get reports, and I schedule the meetings, and like that. So I'm a team player in the sense that I play with the teams, but not so much a team player in the sense that I'm really a member that has a task. My task is to keep all the members being team players. Does that make sense? Yeah. So as leader, you're in charge of all the teams. Does that make you not a team player? No, it makes you the ultimate team player because it means that you're tracking the progress. You have control of the process, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, quite a few people are talking about transparency. At the beginning, when we first meet, when we first get together, I actually tell folks the rules, and I tell them the details of the meetings, when it's going to be, or maybe we're going to decide that now, right? But we make some decisions concerning when and where and how long. We make, this is not a decision because it's not negotiable, but we talk about the civility rules and how they impact what we're doing, right? And we think very carefully about what needs to be done and how it needs to be done, right? Yeah. And so we understand that the leader, my office, I have an assistant who really does the day-to-day the day-to-day tracking work and the day-to-day scheduling and things like that. But you get her number. And we all understand what it is that we're going to do, how it is that we're going to do it, and basically what our obligation to the team is, right? I make this all up front, and I announce the civility rules because they're very, very important. And the idea is that even if we break off into subcommittees, because sometimes we need to, for research purposes, for splitting up people purposes, for whatever it is that's needed, we are still one team and all on it, right? Yeah. See, that's the idea. We're all one team. We're all on one team. But we need to report in. We need to work together. I get all of this straightened away about the reporting requirements, the whole bit. Then we send emails. Yeah, we're big on reminders, I think, is what it is, right? Yeah, because then we know that everybody is indeed working together. We're all in this together. It's all good, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. The next topic is preconceived notions of ours. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is really true. Zoe says you need to acknowledge them to yourself so that you are aware and can guard against bias. Yes. You need to think about yourself and whether or not you've got a preconceived notion and whether or not it's right, which it usually kind of isn't, right? Yeah. And you got to think about how to keep that out of the mix, because it's only appropriate that you remain neutral and that you keep your preconceived notion to yourself and not let it impact your job as leader, not let it impact your leadership, right? Yeah. So you need to be aware of your own preconceived notions, and then you can worry about the preconceived notions of others in the room. But first, you got to think about yourself and think about whether or not, yes, we talked about testing ourselves with the 5W questions. And Suki is making a good point that there's a big difference between learned preconceived notions and personal experience. Learned preconceived notions and personal experience. Learned is usually something that you've developed from your culture, right? Maybe corporate, usually more likely to be a family-type culture. And you've learned some ideas of the way of the world. Mm-hmm. Now let's see if they're true. Probably not completely, right? Mm-hmm. But you learned that young, and you think they're facts. But they're not. Let's think about whether things are a fact. Not necessarily. Things are open to discussion, open to thought, and not to be taken blindly on faith, right? Right. Pardon me. Oh, I got so excited. And then there's personal experience. Pardon me, I'm going to take a sip of water. Oh, goodness. I guess this is a live show. Can I go? Can I cough now? Fabulous. And personal experience, you can reason through better, right? Because you don't, well, maybe you do take that as fact. But the learned ones are kind of ingrained. You kind of think they're facts. And oftentimes you learn that they're not facts, right? Yeah. And so the personal experience ones, You have to think about whether or not it applies as a guideline, but it's different because you've got different people, different situation. Even if the people are the same, it's still a different situation. And you still need to come from a base of neutrality is the key to it. Yeah, you have to come from a base of neutrality. Mm-hmm. And not just say, oh, I know what's going to happen because I've dealt with these people before. Well, maybe you have, but that doesn't mean that you're going to know what's going to happen, right? Yeah, so you need a base of neutrality. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to a conscious decision to do our best. A lot of people are talking about ways to do that, and I think they're pretty cool. I don't usually engage in them, but I've seen it, and they're kind of a meditation in its way to make a conscious decision to do your best. A lot of people are talking about self-talk. I've successfully used it, and they're very pleased. That's when you, I suppose we all self-talk in our mind. We figure out what we think's going to happen and how we think we're going to do it, and then we need to be flexible if what we thought is not exactly it. Some people, and maybe this is you, and there's nothing wrong with it, some people self-talk out loud where other people can hear it. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think I've got a preconceived notion about it, and that may be unfair. I think it's a preconceived notion because I don't personally do it. I suppose I do it mentally, not in so many words, but I prepare real heavy. I'm always the most prepared person in the room. I think that you shouldn't self-talk out loud where you can be heard by others, because it seems to me, and maybe this is a bias, it seems to me that it somewhat shows that you're not confident. Now, maybe that's unfair, but that's how it appears to me, that it seems like, well, your confidence level is not real high because you're kind of nervously chattering over there. If it helps you, I think it's fabulous. Maybe that's untrue, and I'm the only person that thinks that. But I think if it's a negotiation and not just, all right, I've seen people do it before they get on stage before a whole bunch of folk and do a seminar or workshop or something, peace. That, it's no problem if you self-talk out loud, really, because you're not in negotiation in any way, right? Yeah, it's kind of a little pep talk. And people do all kinds of things. They breathe. They take some sort of an herbal, right? Preferably that isn't illegal and doesn't harm their focus. Mm-hmm. And like that. You know, I mean, people do various things in order to calm their nerves, right? Yeah. And so I think it's all fine, right? Then that's a conscious decision to do your best, because you're psyching yourself up. But maybe you shouldn't talk real loud out in public. Yeah, just say. People are talking about keeping a diary of your actions and reactions. Yeah, keeping a diary. What did I do? What could I have done better? What's my perception, really, is what a diary is, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, in my personal opinion, there's no sense in keeping a diary if you're going to lie in it. I know people do. I know a lot of people that do. I don't see the point. There you go. Yes, Elizabeth and others are talking about making a meditation space. A meditation space so that you can really close your eyes and take some deep breaths. I like to do that to fall asleep. Mm-hmm. I have a little routine so that you take deep breaths and breathe slowly and deeply, because it kind of calms the nerves, calms the mind, so that you can nap, so you can go to sleep, right? I don't get a lot of sleep, so I don't like to waste even 10 minutes of it. I get very excited. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so you could have a meditation, really think about things. Ooh, that sounds nice. People are talking about having a kind of, okay, everybody likes a massage, but you can't always go and get one, right? But people are talking about having like one of those massage mats which aids in meditation because it feels nice and it's got the little vibration thing. And I suppose I'm thinking about the electric ones, but there's the kind with the wooden rollers that are manual. Manual, the right word for it? Yeah. But some sort of a device to help with meditation. Yeah, I think it's a CD is kind of nice too. This is an interesting point too. Under conscious decision to do our best, right? George and others say make a vow to yourself because you won't break it. Make a vow to yourself to actually do your best, right? Yeah, let's make it kind of formal, but with ourselves to do our best. The last one under leadership is convivial atmosphere. You know, this is a truth. I really do think this. Helga and others say that it encourages everyone to do their best if they're comfortable. It encourages everyone to do their best if they're comfortable. I think that's true. I think it does encourage everyone to do their best if they're comfortable. And they're feeling relaxed and kind of happy, right? And they want to come because it's a good group. It's a good experience. It's fulfilling. It's nice. It's something that we really are enjoying, right? Yeah. Let's all feel comfortable in our space together. Yes, you need to pick a neutral meeting place for a convivial atmosphere. I usually pick my office, come to think of it. But sometimes not. Someplace that everyone can get to and has good facilities and whatever it is you need. You might need good parking, for example, might be very important. Whatever, and really be open in the evenings might be important. Yeah. So you need a neutral meeting place and a comfortable setting. I think comfortable setting includes, I don't know, everybody has a nice chair and a cup of coffee. And I suppose we're kind of food-centric at Recipe for Peace now. But we do think that food is a good tool to get people talking and to get people together. So we really use the food as a tool. Yeah. Good point too. Lee says that in order to make a convivial atmosphere, the meetings need to be pleasant. That means enforcing the civility rules so that you want to come as leader and as participant. Yes, pleasant and civil, so that you want to come as leader and as participant. Right. Now let's talk about participant best self because and how we can help them to achieve that. Because they need to be in their best self too, so that we can really go forward. And they do. They really need to bring their A game, right? They need to really be, they're very, do the very, very best they can, just as we do the very, very best we can. Excuse me, I took a sip of water. And that is extremely important. To really model the civility rules is one of the ways that we can help them, right? Yes, that because it makes everyone be on their best behavior. At their core, the civility rules say we will not be rude to each other. At their core, that's what they say. We will not be rude to each other. Now, what does that encompass? Well, it encompasses a lot of stuff. It means that we will act in a civil manner at all times so that everybody, it's a pleasure to come, so that everybody goes, wow, this is really a great group. I'm glad I'm in it. And I really want to be in it, and they talk about it favorably and like that. And the civility rules make everyone be on their best behavior. Because sometimes people in the heat of an argument might get kind of rude. No, we will not have it. We're going to act in a civil manner at all times, and we as leaders model that for the participants' benefit. This is really true. Jessica says you can't enforce what you don't model. This is true. And remember always that the civility rules permeate everything, and they need to be announced as part of our transparency right away. They need to be enforced immediately, consistently, and fairly. The civility rules need to be enforced immediately, consistently, and fairly. Very, very important. You cannot enforce the civility rules once everything's gone uncivil and you've let it go unchecked. You have to know it immediately, and you have to say, no, this is inappropriate behavior. We will not engage in it. Right? This is inappropriate behavior. We will not engage in it. Another way to help our participants be their very best self is by creating inclusion, right? One of the ways to do that, yes, thank you. One of the ways to do that is by making sure that everyone speaks. There are always some people in the room who are extroverts and really, really want to speak. And there are some people in the room who are hesitant. They are introverts, or they've kind of gotten scared by the extroverts. And I'm afraid, of course, that most of us are extroverts. But and we don't mean to. And I actually, in order to be my best self, I have to remember to let other people speak. Isn't that funny? I do. In order to be my best self as a leader, I have to remember that I'm not the only one here, right? That I need to allow other people to have their turn, to be able to speak, to be able to say what they need to say, right? And that's important too. I'm not the only one. I need to allow other people's opinions, other people's ideas, other people's needs, right? Very important. We do indeed make time limits for speaking, especially if there's a lot to know and we really are presenting. Now, you don't have a time limit if it's a fairly convivial group and they're talking up and back. You know what I mean? Although I do specifically ask, what do you think of people who are not participating because they're kind of scared? Or shy. Or for whatever reason they're not participating, they're not participating. So I do indeed call on them, so to speak. I say, what's your opinion about this? Right? Because I want to know. Simple as that. And oftentimes they have a really good opinion. They're just kind of, they're not certain that they can speak in such an august group. You know what I mean? They get kind of shy around the other people. And they're not sure that they can say it as well, but of course they can. Yes, and we do make, but if there's actual presentations being made and everybody needs their turn, we do make time limits. I like to enforce the time limit in a way that everyone can see so that they don't feel that they haven't had the same amount of time as somebody else. Because, you know, there is that thought, isn't there? I didn't get my full turn. Well, let's make sure that you do get your full turn, right? And so those time limits, I usually enforce in a way that everyone can see, I use a kitchen timer. Plain ordinary tick, 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 ding type timer that I sit where somebody can see it, where everybody can see it, come to think of it. Yeah, I do. You know, this is a question that comes up quite a bit, and it's come up again. People ask if everybody has, say, 2 minutes or whatever kind of time we've got, and their 2 minutes are up, ding, can someone in the group who agrees with them give them their time? It's a reasonable question. Somebody who doesn't particularly themselves care to speak but agrees with what has been said, can they give their allotted time to that speaker? I'm going to say it depends. Sometimes I do allow it because somebody's in the middle of an argument and it goes ding, right? And sometimes you want to hear from everybody. I'd like to hear from everybody, well, half the time, okay? Because not everybody speaks always. And I would like, if somebody's going to give the prior speaker, for example, their time, I'd like to hear them discuss why. Because I want to hear what kind of agreement they've got with the prior speaker. Yeah, and I think that that's kind of important that they get to articulate why. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Creating inclusion, which helps our participants be their very best. This is very important. William and others are talking about separating cliques. Those little groups of people that come in together, sit together, giggle together, and vote together and like that. Let's separate them out because they are not being inclusive. They are creating exclusion because they're excluding the other people in the room who aren't in their little group. No, we will not be doing that. We're going to be inclusive, and we're going to say, you know, everybody is included in this discussion. Everybody gets their turn. Everybody gets heard. Yes, very important. Mm-hmm. Yes, and also as in creating inclusion, you need to, as leader, to be open to questions. Yeah, open to questions. I truly am open to questions. If the same question keeps coming up time after time, we discuss why. If the same person is asking the same exact question, just in different ways, time after time, we might talk privately, so that we understand why that is, that we're not quite understanding what it is that, well, that we thought people understood. Does that make sense? Yes, of course it does. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about discussing what we're doing as a team, which is important also, to discuss what it is that we are planning, what it is that's going on, and which makes our participants do their very best because they want to be intelligent on the team. They don't want to be the dead number. Does that make sense? Yeah, nobody wants to be the one that doesn't know anything, that's always kind of in a corner over there. Yeah, no. We will not be doing that. We're going to discuss things as a team, and we're going to think about them and include everyone and get everybody's opinion. Mm-hmm. Discussion as a team does mean that the leader is available for questions and assistance. Mm-hmm. You can set parameters. You can set how many hours, how many times, and like that, and when it starts to be more expensive, sometimes you need to charge extra if somebody's taking off an awful lot of your time. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of limits need to be set. Ouch, sorry, hit my knee. This really is a live show. It's kind of like, oh, look, I bumped my knee on my table. Those kinds of limits need to be established right off. and because and you can't like change the rules in midstream because somebody's nagging you. No, you have to set some limits. I usually, well, usually being a big word, it depends on the group, but sometimes I'll even set a time when I'm available so that everybody knows when it is that Sue can, you can ask questions for this group, right? And I do indeed have a fabulous assistant who will answer most questions, and I don't really have to. Does that make sense? Yeah, she answers really, really well lots of things. And it's like, you know, I don't have to answer that because it's been covered. Yeah, and it's fabulous. She's fabulous, yes. Mm-hmm. And it's important, yes, people are asking about interns. This digresses a smidge, but it's important to have someone competent keeping track of progress, the process, and answering questions, right? And if that isn't you because you are too busy, you need to have someone competent and not just kind of let people go on their own and kind of go, well, they can handle it, they're smart. Not so much on the handling part necessarily, right? Yeah. So you need to be able to have a way to ask a question before somebody goes off on their own and does something, well, that's not helpful, right? Yeah. So you need a way to ask questions, mm-hmm. A person to ask questions of. Discuss as a team, which helps our best self. Yeah, I call it, this is true. Edgar says to create a team mentality of the entire group. That's what I call group dynamic. You hear me say the words group dynamic quite a bit, and that you should watch the group dynamic and think about it and help form it. That's the idea of working together as a team, right? And the team mentality. I call it group dynamic, but it really is team mentality. It means we're in this together. Let's get it done, essentially speaking. We're in this together. Let's get it done, right? Yeah. This is a good point, too, that if you discuss as a team, Lou says to carefully choose the makeup of the smaller teams that report to the whole. Carefully choose the makeup of the smaller teams that report to the whole. Yes, I am big on forming teams, smaller teams if necessary. I don't do it the democratic way and let you all vote or pick straws or something. I like to actually assign people to a team. People I think that will enhance the other people and get our information faster, better, cleaner, more useful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they report to the whole exactly. Do role play? Yes, this is really true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to accept this. Bobby says that role play is an exercise in empathy because it creates understanding. An exercise in empathy because it creates understanding. I have to take the opposite role than what I really think. And I have to do it sincerely and well and not just go, eh. It creates some empathy, and which is understanding. You don't necessarily change your mind. In fact, you probably won't. But it gives you some understanding of what somebody else thinks, why they have the position they do. Right? Yes. Quite a few people are calling it a bonding exercise, where you kind of bond with each other because you gain understanding of what's going on. I can go with that. I like the idea of a bonding exercise. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a very important point that Muhammad and others are making. If you're going to role play, you can't just let people do it. You've got to be the referee as leader. Muhammad says it needs a leader input to prevent misunderstandings. Yes, because it seems maybe like somebody's being rude in some way. No, you don't want to make it worse. The whole idea is to gain empathy and understanding, right? Yes. So you need to be there. You need leader input. You need to be the referee to make sure that everything goes smoothly and that you and it's really making you come closer together and not further apart somehow, right? Mm-hmm. Our last one is going to be to invite the invisible participants. And yes, I know, we're going to run out of time and not do the recipes. But we've had such a fabulous discussion. And it's really kind of more important than the recipes. Although next time, I will try to be sure and leave time for at least one. Because I know quite a few of you like them. Invite the invisible participants. Yes, the people who are not in the room, who are influencing your participants, influencing what they think, what they feel, when they want to do something, the influencing the 5W questions, influencing everything. Sometimes there's people who aren't there, but they are there because your participants are reporting back. Yes, they're reporting back, and you need to see if you can invite them in so you can really hear what it is they think, what it is they're doing, what it is that their opinion is, and so they can be part of the consensus building. We're all going to work on being more tolerant, reaching consensus, which is going to have some compromise involved, right? Yes. We're all going to work on being more tolerant about that and not on settling our positions and refusing to budge, right? And that for that, you need the invisible participants, the ones who are having influence, who you haven't connected with, and they're not in the room. They're steering a participant, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a very good point, too, that you need to honor if they want to remain anonymous. Yes, sometimes the invisible don't want to come forward because they want to have nobody know that they're helping, right? Because, well, it might have something to do with their job or something. For some reason, they don't want to be actually listed. They don't want to be known, but they'd like to help. Let's think about that. We're going to honor the fact that they wish to remain anonymous. Why wouldn't you? Because you can get some really fabulous expert opinions and like that, and they want to remain anonymous. There's nothing wrong with that. Yes, let's do it. Mm-hmm. My friends, we are out of time with that sentence about let's do it. We are out of time. Thank you so much. We'll do the recipes next time, I hope. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your participation. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows archived on that website. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.